Okay, let's get it. Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. Catch me every weekday afternoon, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, TV simulcast on Cox Sports Television. Tigers will wrap up, for all intents and purposes, fall camp today, Wednesday. A Thursday starts their walkthrough game prep, and practices close to the media as the Tigers fully turn their attention on Thursday to Georgia Southern. So today, this afternoon, will be the last media availability of fall camp for LSU. We'll tell you what, I was percolating out on the Ponderosa on Tuesday. The comings and goings, you'll hear from Grant Delp with Joe Burrow, and the LSU basketball team, since we last spoke, has played two games in Barcelona, and they won both of them, so we'll recap those, and we'll get to your Q&A. So first and foremost, congrats to both Grant Delpit and Christian Fulton, named AP preseason All-Americans. Delpit a first-teamer, Fulton a second-teamer, both well-deserved, and I think it's just remarkable when you think about the perseverance that a guy like Christian Fulton has had. Lesser players, lesser people, when faced with the adversity he did with his suspension, would have left. They would have left LSU, gone and played junior college, gotten on the field, and then transferred back into the FBS for their final season. Fulton didn't do that. He took his medicine, he sat, he waited, and he persevered, and now he's a preseason All-America on a top 10 team with tons of ambitions here in his senior year. And, you know, if he stays healthy, very likely a first-round draft pick, which is just a fantastic story that I think a lot of people can rally behind and feel good about Christian Fulton. Delpit is the given. He was the unanimous All-American a year ago and the leader of an LSU secondary, which will be one of the best in all of college football this year. Both Grant Delpit and Joe Burrow spoke with the media on Tuesday. Delpit, as the unquestioned leader of LSU's secondary, talked about the secondary, which he feels is the best in America.
This is the best secondary in the country, no doubt. That's without a doubt in my mind. You know, there's some people that don't believe that, but we're not trying to prove that to anybody. We're trying to just prove it to ourselves. You know, we're trying to get the most picks, the most plays, most, you know, just knowing your assignment and all that. So, yeah, I think we definitely have a very talented group.
It was interesting to hear former LSU Tiger Ryan Clark, we played on the podcast last week, talk about how early in the season he feels the offense may need to pace the defense while they come along. I'm not so sure I agree, but he knows much more about football than I do. But one of the things he talked about, especially with a guy like Derek Stingley, although he has as many physical attributes as anybody that's ever played the position at LSU, still a freshman, and you would expect some kind of a learning curve there early in the season. But Delpit leads that group, and that group has also gotten to see LSU's offense up close and personal and practiced against them now for a month. Here's what Delpit said about Joe Burrow, about Joe Brady, and this new LSU offense.
I see it's going to be dangerous. I see it's going to be high-powered. You know, I see that we're going to get the ball in the playmaker's hands and just make him make plays in space. You know, trying to attack on open field is one of the most hardest things to do in you know, football. So that's what our offense is trying to do, trying to get in the playmaker's hands. So I think they're going to be dangerous.
But the key to getting the ball to the playmakers is giving the quarterback time to get the ball to the playmakers. That's something LSU did not do well last year. We've talked about it. They were triple digits nationally in the rankings and sacks allowed and tackles for loss. LSU's offensive line wasn't great, and that's been a gigantic question mark so far through fall camp because of a lot of injuries to Chasen Hines, to Damian Lewis, most recently to Cardell Thomas. Joe Burrow met with the media on Tuesday, and he did discuss the big uglies up front.
The O-line, I just want to, you know, kind of brag on them. They've had a hell of a camp. They're one of the most improved groups I've ever been around. Those 5, 6, 7 guys worked their tails off all offseason. I'm so proud of those guys.
First things first, it's easy to tell why this team loves Joe Burrow and rallies behind him. He went and bragged on a unit that's been questioned all throughout camp and that had its struggles a year ago. That's going to make those guys want to go to war for him, which is a great starting point. And I respect it tremendously. The reality is when LSU's offensive line is lined up against Auburn, which may have the best defensive line in college football this year, when you talk about guys like Big Cat Bryant and Nick Coe And, of course, Derrick Brown, who's going to be on everybody's All-America list this year, that's an enormous challenge. Same thing whenever you take on Florida and guys like Jabari Zuniga, and we know the challenge that Alabama presents, and Texas A&M has a veteran defensive front this year as well. So my point is, you may look improved in practice, and you may be able to handle yourself against Georgia Southern. What about those games that are going to make or break your season when you're going against the best defensive lines in the SEC and in college football? That's what we'll only know whenever they tee it up and kick it off. And the great news is we're under 2 weeks away from that now. It's exciting. One more from Joe Burrow, who did talk about LSU's preseason ranking.
I mean, we see it, but we knew we were going to be pretty good last year, and where we were unranked last year, I think. So preseason polls don't really mean a whole lot. It's just a little number on the screen when you're playing on ESPN, and the ones at the end of the year really matter.
He's absolutely right. But as we discussed yesterday when we knew the ranking, what does matter is your poll position. And where you start sometimes can determine where you finish. We gave you the example yesterday of like Stanford. What if Stanford runs the table, but or finishes with one loss, but the four or five teams in the top 10 that are similar finish undefeated or one loss? Well, Stanford's not going to leapfrog those teams because of where they started. So what happened to Auburn in 2004? USC and Oklahoma started the season ranked ahead of Auburn. Auburn went undefeated. They couldn't leapfrog the teams that the perception at the start of the season was they were better. So that's why, if you're LSU, it's a great thing to start where you are and understanding that you'll have an opportunity to play Bama and conceivably Georgia in an SEC championship game should you get there and control your own destiny. So Joe Burrow's right. It's just a number, and it's not of great consequence until it is. And that's why you'd rather be positioned where you are if you're LSU. Okay, it's Locked On LSU, your team every day. Basketball Tigers won two games in Spain. We'll tell you about it next. Fantasy football players, make sure you're listening to Vinny Iyer, Locked On Fantasy Football. Vinny gives you the edge with more than 20 years covering fantasy football. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else, then you're the same. Get the edge from Vinny. That'll put you ahead on draft day and put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider. This is Locked On LSU. It's odd that in August we're talking LSU basketball, but the Tigers have wrapped up their tour of Spain, 10-day tour, played four games. They lost their first game by 4 points to a Dominican Republic All-Star team, which was in the FIBA World Rankings at number 18. So a very formidable test, that which they came up just short, but really nice performances by Emmett Williams and Trendon Watford. In the second game, as we told you, LSU went out and just throttled the Valencia All-Stars on Saturday, 111-86. Trendon Watford, again, the leading scorer there. And yesterday, whenever we recorded this podcast, LSU had yet to take the court against FC Barcelona All-Stars. And they did that on Tuesday afternoon and then played again Wednesday morning Central Time at 5:30 a.m. So since we last spoke, they've played their third and fourth games of this tour. So, and they finished with almost identical scores. The third game of the tour, LSU wins 107-78. And then early this morning Central Time, they beat FC Barcelona 101-77. So LSU finishes their trip in Spain 3-1. I don't want to overreact really to anything on this trip, because in many respects, it's what it is. You were playing some outman competition. You had some lopsided scores, but it was a great opportunity for this unit that has not only new players, but new players in new roles. When you consider Trendon Watford, who's going to be a key contributor, getting an opportunity to play somebody else with his teammates right now. When you consider Tremont Waters off to the NBA, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, how do they do in the backcourt leading this team? Guys like Charles Manning and James Bishop, or, you know, Cortese Cooper and Andre Hyatt, a couple of guys that that redshirted for you. So to see them get an opportunity to get out there, run around a little bit and hoop and get this unit to gel is probably the most beneficial thing. So in the third game, interesting that Cortese Cooper and Marshall Graves actually led LSU with 13 points. Trendon Watford, Emmett Williams had 12 each. James Bishop, Charles Manning each with 11. And then Andre Hyatt with 10. It was nice to see Javonte Smart with 5 assists in the ball game, and LSU dominated the paint 47-28 on the rebounding edge. So, for the most part, LSU was going against a team that played a ton of threes, played some zone. So, LSU got a couple of different looks and still succeeded against them. And then in the fourth game, which was played again early Wednesday morning, 5:30 a.m. Central Time, which was like 12:30 there in Spain. You're just after noon in Spain. LSU wins 101-77 against the FC Barcelona B squad. It was nice to see this happen again with LSU scoring over 100 points in each of the last three games. They also got to play a four quarter system instead of two halves. For LSU, they had 6 players in double figures. Darius Days led the way with 15 points. So in each of the 4 games, LSU had a different leading score in each of the 4 games, which is good to see. Charles Manning did a really nice job inside and out, scored 14 points, as did Trendon Watford and Skylar Mays. One thing I might have liked to have seen was in one of the games have someone in LSU's backcourt, be it Javonte or Skylar, just take over the ball game. Now, it's difficult not having seen the game because that could have happened. For example, in this fourth game, Javonte had 13 points and 5 assists. So did Javonte, while he was on the floor, dominate the game? Maybe so, but we didn't get to see it or hear it. But nonetheless, Emmett Williams also with 13 and 8. He was LSU's leading rebounder in this ball game. And for me, the biggest takeaways, Trendon Watford looks like he's absolutely ready to contribute immediately. Emmett Williams looks like he's picked up the slack immensely from a guy who was a sixth man, an energy guy off the bench, who provided a defense and rebounding, and when you needed some offense, he could supplement, to a guy that is going to be one of the key contributors on this team. It was also nice to see Darius Days in the third game lead the team in scoring. Look, LSU stuffed the stat sheet. In this fourth game, 60-32, LSU led in the paint. They doubled them up in the paint, which is great to see. And they forced 23 turnovers. So, you know, if there's anything that we didn't get to see that I would like to see, shooting percentages, free throw percentages, things like that. But for the most part, LSU goes over 100 points 3 of the 4 games. They won 3 of the games in blowout fashion. Just physically looked superior to the teams they played. And most importantly, had an opportunity to go run against somebody else and get 10 days internationally for this group to bond, which I think should help them, you know, as they start the season and hopefully start on a good foot. They start the season against Louisiana Tech in an exhibition on November the 2nd, and then the regular season starts at home November the 8th against Bowling Green. Then they go up to VCU, back home against Nichols, and then UMBC, which of course has the greatest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago when they beat number 1 Virginia. Then the Tigers go to Jamaica. They'll play Missouri State at home, UNO, Northwestern State, East Tennessee State. Then they go out to LA to play USC. They're home against Liberty. They'll play in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, we know, in January, but before that, the SEC schedule will get rolling. So we're waiting on that finality to be listed at this point, but LSU's preseason non-conference schedule is set. It's loaded up with some nice games, no doubt some net ranking opportunities as well, and here's hoping a team that gets off to a really good start this year, piggybacking this trip out to Spain. All right, it's Locked On LSU, your team every day. Final break, we'll come back and do a little Q&A. Stick around. Locked On LSU, your team every day. Wrapping up another edition of the Locked On LSU podcast, your team every day. We'll get to your questions. Got to remind you about the new Locked On NFL. Last week, one of the most listened to NFL shows with the expert analysis of former NFL scout Matt Williamson and hosted by Brian Peacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt's unique take on the game. Follow Locked On NFL now on your favorite podcast provider. All right, let's wrap up with a little Q&A. You know the drill. Get to my Facebook page, at Matt Moscona, AFR. Subscribe to the page, set notifications when we go live. You can jump aboard with us, get your question asked. Steven out the chute. With Ed Ogeron saying Miles Brennan was going to get more significant snaps this year, do you plan on him playing mostly fourth quarters of the Utah State, Northwestern State, Georgia Southern games? So I would hope so, Stephen. But the key, obviously, for LSU is take care of business to get to that point when you can hand the ball over to Miles Brennan in the fourth quarter. Utah State was a 10-win team a year ago, and they have a veteran quarterback. Same with, you know, Georgia Southern, and they kind of worry you a little bit because of the option offense that they're going to run. And, you know, played Clemson a year ago, and, you know, that was still a game. I think it was scoreless after the first quarter. So it's one of those things where, man, yes, absolutely. You want LSU to go take care of its business, get a big lead, and give Brennan an opportunity to run out there, but you got to take care of your business first. Here's one from Craig who says, say our offense is stagnant. What changes, if any, would you expect to happen? New coaches, or do they ride another season before going that direction? I'd have to see how it looks. I mean, that's the obvious cop-out answer. But I think the bigger question is, how much longer does Steve Ensminger want to be an offensive coordinator? I mean, we're digging up an old conversation now, but Ed Ogeron essentially had to beg Steve Ensminger to do this job. He didn't want to do it. Steve was quite content as the tight ends coach, coaching at his alma mater, living in his hometown, near his family, making $350K a year, more money than he had ever made in a season as a coach. He was quite content in that role, not having the pressure, the scrutiny of being a coordinator, the potential job security issues, which we're talking about now, obviously. But, you know, Steve is at a point where I don't think he coaches another 10 years. I'm not sure Steve coaches another 5 years. So really it's a matter of, do things go well this year, and does Steve want to walk? And if that's the case, then you're looking for options. And, you know, whether or not Joe Brady is that option, I think certainly depends on how this year goes. Next up is Andrew. Is offensive line your biggest concern on staying healthy? It's not only my biggest concern on staying healthy, it's just my biggest concern on the team, period. I've said here and other places that Lloyd Cushenberry is LSU's most indispensable player. I'm not saying he's their best player or their most valuable player. I'm telling you, he's their most indispensable player in that they don't have another center. They're cross-training guys at that position in case if they need a backup. Chasen Hines has been taking some snaps there. You know, they're trying to find guys that can play that position if needed. They just don't have a backup. When Cole Smith transferred, they were left really in a bind at that spot. When you look behind your projected starters at guard with Chasen Hines and Damian Lewis, if they're not there, you're counting on Adrian McGee and Badara Traoré, some veteran guys who have never really played consistent ball in their entire careers at LSU. You know, typically, you know, if you're a senior and you haven't played yet, there's usually a reason why that is. So, yeah, that's 100%. Like, everywhere else on the field, I like LSU starters in the defensive front seven. They got so much depth at linebacker right now. I think it's the best since maybe 2010, 2011, when Kevin Minter was a backup in 2010, when you think about how much depth they had then. The secondary, of course, LSU has earned its reputation there. You got a senior quarterback. You've got tons of numbers and talent at receiver. You got four or five running backs that you like. It's the answer is offensive line. 100% it is. All right, one more. How about Brandon DeVille, who says, since 2000, only three times has LSU had three wide receivers with 500 receiving yards in a season, 03, 06, and 07. He writes, championship, Sugar Bowl championship. Do you think it's plausible to have three wide receivers with 500 yards this year? I do, if you include Stephon Sullivan. So I do think Sullivan as a flex tight end is going to be a key part of this offense, and I absolutely believe Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase each go over 500 yards. The next most likely receiver to do that, in my opinion, would be Terrace Marshall, and then after that I'd give you Derek Dillon, just because he's a shifty change of pace guy that I think can be a home run hitter in this offense if he's healthy. He had the hip surgery in the offseason. Remember, he had the big catch and run score against Auburn, same in the bowl game against UCF. So Marshall and Dillon would be the next options behind Jefferson and Chase, but I think the most likely to get 500 receiving yards after the first two receivers, Jefferson and Chase, is Stephon Sullivan if you'd count a tight end. All right, it's going to do it for us here. We'll put a button on it. We'll see you tomorrow for Locked On LSU, your team every day.